Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast at Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my Hopkins homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, we have a terrific show this week. With so many conference tournaments to preview, we even revised our schedule to get you ready for all the important games on Thursday as we roll full steam ahead into May Madness. As part of our previews, we talked to Michigan head coach Kevin Connery as he prepares to take on the number one ranked Terps in the Big Ten semis. Lots to talk about. So, Dixie, let's get it.
The full whip is back. I like it.
Yeah, man. Hey, it's on. It's championship.
Ain't no half whipping.
It's championship week across Division I lacrosse landscape. And I've always found the games on Thursday, the semifinal day of the conference tournaments, the majority of them, to be one of the best days of the year for lacrosse fans. And that day is today, Thursday, May 6th.
Yeah, it really is. And one of my fondest memories, this was a few years ago. I can't remember the exact year, but I flew to Islip, and then I was going to Stony Brook to call the America East Championship game. And that was, I think it was Albany and UMBC. And I was doing the game. I did the game a couple years. I did it 1 year with Paul Carcaterra. I did it another year with Ryan Flanagan. I think this is the year I was with Carc. But I went to my hotel, and Albany was staying at my hotel. And I had been texting with Scott Marr, and he invited me up to watch lacrosse. So it was Scott and his dad, Fred. I don't know if you remember Mr. Marr from back in the day.
No, don't.
Great guy. Great guy. Passed away a few years ago. Terrific man. Always loved seeing him. So it was basically Scott and his family were watching. I think it was the Colonial or maybe the Ivies that were playing on that. So it was a Friday. And the America East Championship game is always 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, breakfast and wherever the tournament that year was breakfast at Lavelle Stadium. But I just remember sitting there watching Ivy League. I'm pretty sure it was Ivy's with Scott and his family. And it was just really, really cool. But I remember driving in, I was keeping track of the CAA tournament, like, you know, on my phone, responsibly driving, but, you know, still checking at red lights and things like that. And then I get to the hotel, and then I, you know, like I said, I went up to the Mars room, and that was just like really fun. So that's what you have, like, you know, CAA, America East. Unfortunately, no Ivy this year, but, you know, we're in the midst of the Patriot and Big Ten's coming up this week. And it's coming at you from all different angles, the MAC, you know, so it's great.
Yeah, it's all on this week. And what's at stake is there's 8 automatic qualifier bids that will be determined this week and this weekend, as well as really the final opportunity for a lot of teams for those 8 at-large spots. And Dix, I got to ask you, are there 8 at-large spots or are there 3 at-large spots? Because I keep hearing from different people that it's a foregone stone cold lock that the ACC is going to take at least five of those at-large bids. And I'm not so sure of that after what I've seen out of Syracuse this past weekend against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And I got to give credit to Terry Foy. So a lot of people will rag on the Big Ten for only playing conference lacrosse. And look, the NCAA tournament, you're not supposed to use the eye test. And I covered the Big Ten women's tournament last week. And in our preparation, myself and Rachel DiCecco, part of our preparation was speaking to the head coaches. We had a great conversation with Amy Bacher from Ohio State. And she came over from Stanford. And Amy used to be on the NCAA selection committee for women's lacrosse. And she said, we were always discouraged from using the eye test because it became a case of teams you wanted to see play versus teams that deserve to play. And she said, you know, I don't know, maybe the eye test has to come into play this year in some way, shape or form, because like the RPI is a mess. It's an absolute wreck. When you have Northwestern, a number two ranked women's team in the country, and you watch this team play, I watched them play last week in person in the championship game against the University of Maryland. Their RPI is 8. I mean, that is a top 3 team, maybe a top 2 team in women's college lacrosse. Coach Bacher then referenced the volleyball situation from the NCAA where in the women's side where the NCAA recognized, you know, I think it was Wisconsin had the number 28 RPI, but they were the number one overall seed. Ohio State had an RPI in the 50s. They got a seed of a top 10. And then Penn State had an RPI in the 80s, and they got a seed of 13, I believe. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, in a sport like volleyball, common sense won out in that situation. But let's take a look at the records. Let's take a look at competition, etc. Terry Foy put a great tweet out a few days ago showing that if the ACC played conference only, this is what the records would be. So Duke 8-2, Carolina 6-4, Notre Dame 5-5, Syracuse and Virginia 3-7. 3-7. So, you know, Virginia has a nice win over Army that has value right now. That value could decrease if the Black Knights lose in the actually, Virginia's in a great spot because they beat both Loyola and Army. And those two teams play in the Patriot League semifinals. So they're getting a bump, you know, whatever the case may be. Syracuse, on the other hand, I mean, they have 4 blowout losses. And they ducked Lehigh. And now they're playing Robert Morris this weekend. So I'm not sold on Syracuse. That's the one that I'm just not sold on. Everybody's like, well, the resume. Okay, they have 2 wins over Virginia, who, if you were to strip away all those out-of-conference games, Virginia's 3-7. But I know you can't do that because those guys actually did play. And I think they're, 30-1 against out-of-conference teams. But the majority of that is the SoCon. And I'd have to go back and look. I should have looked before we had this conversation. Has a SoCon ever won an NCAA tournament game?
I don't think so.
I'm thinking Richmond, but I know the Northeast Conference has with Bryant. You know, I know the CAA has.
Sure.
Many. I know the Big East has, obviously, but you know, so you know, and baked into that, you know, you have 2 wins over Denver for Carolina and Duke, right? You have wins over Army and Loyola from the Patriot. I know I'm forgetting some others. I wish I had. I should have pulled that record up as we're speaking. But anyway,
here's the scenario. You know, with Navy losing their Patriot League quarterfinal game, they're the number 13 ranked team this week's IL Media poll. I think their season is over.
I would agree with that.
I don't know if Loyola gets an at-large bid with 6 losses. I think their Towson loss killed them. They need to win the Patriot League championship, and I don't think.
Or at least get to the Patriot League championship game.
I don't think that gets them there. With 6
you might be right. I'm just saying, to stay in the conversation,
Would Army still be in the conversation? Would Lehigh still be in the conversation if Loyola wins the championship outright? But here are the two leagues that I really think are crazy if someone steals a bid. The Big East, if Villanova wins, you mean to tell me Georgetown and Denver don't deserve to be in the NCAA tournament? Or if Hopkins or Michigan somehow win the Big Ten tournament? Are you trying to tell me that Rutgers does not belong in the NCAA tournament? That is a NCAA tournament team that should be seeded in the top 8 in the NCAA tournament. So I'm just not so sold on a guaranteed lock on the ACC, and I agree with you for everything that you said. So,
well, let's talk about Denver, okay? I think they're a fantastic team, first and foremost. But if you do look at their resume, losses to Duke, losses to Carolina, loss to Georgetown, then they're conference only, right? So they did play some out-of-conference games, but it looks like it was 3 of them, right? Utah, Duke, Carolina.
Air Force.
Air Force. Did they play Air Force? Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Yeah, the first four games of the year. But anyway, I mean, yeah, to suggest that. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, it's hard. Denver's a really good looking team. Georgia, it's just a funky year. It's a really, really funky, unique year. But it's in, like, I feel like we've been hearing the ACC is a five bid conference since February, before they even played. And then let's say they had like one or two games against non-conference teams and they're rolling teams. And oh yeah, this is a five bid league. It just seems like it's been a foregone conclusion. No disrespect to any of those teams, but you know, it just seems like there's a narrative that's been established, and you know, it's almost like turning on the news, and you know, they want you to think some way versus, you know, having the information to make your own decision, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it'll be determined on the field.
What do you think? So you just agree with everything I said? Do you have any additional thoughts? I guess here on an island by myself.
I said I made my point. I don't believe that the ACC is a foregone conclusion for five at-large bids based on recent play and even non-conference games. I think that the Patriot League, I don't think Army or Loyola can get in if they – that's an elimination game, okay. I think. But I don't think Loyola –
What about Lehigh? Lehigh and the loss to Villanova? If Villanova falters in the Big East.
Villanova's looking like – they have some good wins, and they've played well at times too. Again – for me, it comes down to if Hopkins or Michigan wins, Rutgers should be in the NCAA tournament. Let me put it that way. And I think that the Big East could get three teams too if Denver and, let's say, Georgetown don't win there. I think there should be a conversation for sure about who gets those last couple at-large spots, and it shouldn't necessarily be the ACC getting all five.
When you say Villanova, other than Lehigh, if Villanova has quality wins, who are their other quality wins?
All right. Well, let me look at it. Well, they have a great non-conference win over Lehigh.
That's it.
No, you're correct.
I mean, I'm not trying to pick on Villanova. I mean, that win over Lehigh and the way they did it was impressive. We talked about it last week.
No. My point is, if Villanova wins the Big East championship,
what do you do with Denver and Georgetown?
That's my point.
Understood.
If someone other than
Rutgers or Maryland, if they lose in the semis or championship, then they're good. They're okay.
No. If someone other than Rutgers or Maryland wins the Big Ten championship, what do you do with Rutgers?
Yeah.
You know, Maryland's probably in the tournament and they deserve to be a top seed, but Rutgers deserves to be in that tournament too. And that's where I'm saying, I'm not so sure the ACC has a lockdown on those five bids, and we'll see what happens, which is a great segue, Dix. Let's get to these games. We've got lots of conference tournament games to preview.
Just to put a bow on it, to put it conceptually, like, you know, you work for a business, right? Where you walk into a boardroom. I mean, let's go pre-COVID. You walk into a meeting room, you walk into a boardroom, and you've got eight things you need to get done. You have eight slots to fill. How do you feel if you walk into a room and five of them are already filled before you have any conversation? I'm asking.
Yeah, it doesn't seem fair to
you don't feel good about it, right? You don't feel good. Right. So I think that's where fans are starting to get a little prickly when they're being told that, you know, these five spots are taken. We only have three. Well, wait a minute. Well, yeah, we saved you all the time and the hassle. We figured it out for you, kind of thing. So anyway, moving on.
So we'll start in the America East. Their semifinals will be played at UMBC. First game of the day will be number one seed UMBC versus number four Albany. You'll be able to watch that game on AmericaEast.tv streaming.
They do a pretty good job from years past, if I recall correctly.
By the way, Dix, there was a great article on Inside Lacrosse this week that organized this for fans and viewers. Not only did they list it by conferences, but then they broke it down by day, which I loved. I just love this. And I'm going to reference this throughout our podcast today, and we'll link this in the story. But this
hats
is
off to fans. Hats off to Terry Foy and Matt Kinnear did a great job with that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, your thoughts. Number one, UMBC versus number four seed Albany.
These guys have battled year in and year out. It's always a great matchup. This year, it was UMBC only played Albany once, and they lost 14-9 at Albany back on April 11th. But since then, the Retrievers have reeled off three straight victories. You look at their one-goal games, you know, one, two, three, four, five overtime, five one-goal wins, two of them are in overtime. So I just feel like UMBC has been more steady Eddie and more consistent. Albany's been the great space coaster up and down. But the America East, man, I can remember the one year I did the – so I think I did the America East Championship 3 years. And the last time I did it was with Chris Cotter. And we were anticipating Albany and I think UMBC, and it ended up being Vermont and Hartford in the championship game. And it was a great game. It was like 18-16. I believe Hartford won. So you never know what to expect with the America East. 2021 in particular should be a great game.
Well, in the second game of that, Vermont will have a rematch with Stony Brook. These teams played a classic game this past Saturday with Vermont earning a 14-13 last second win over Stony Brook. And they're going to come back at it just 5 days later.
Stony Brook had been on a 6-game win streak, and then they lose to UMBC 14-13 in overtime, and then they lose to Vermont 14-13. So, and Vermont had that loss to Binghamton coming off of COVID. Now they've won two in a row. Two-goal decision over Albany, one-goal victory, as I just mentioned, over Stony Brook. So, again, you know, who knows what to expect in this game. When these guys played during the regular season, that was the only meeting, the 14-13 win by Vermont. So, again, you know, who knows what to expect. I think you got to – I might lean more towards Stony Brook in this one, you know, losing by a goal last week. Will they – figure it out and come back. But Vermont's been playing really good lacrosse since that eye-opening loss to the Bing.
Moving on to the CAA semifinals. These games will be played at Hofstra. You can watch these games on LAC Sportsnet. The first game of the evening is number one seed Delaware Blue Hens versus the home team, number four, Hofstra.
Delaware, 7-1 in the conference, upset by Drexel a couple weeks ago. So I think that Drexel's probably playing the best lacrosse, maybe them being they're the most confident heading into the tournament. They knocked Towson out last week. That was a heartbreaker for the Tigers. But, you know, Delaware, Hofstra, Delaware's on a 3-game win streak. Hofstra was able to get back on track after stubbing their toe a little bit. Ryan Tierney, one of the best shooters, one of the best players in college lacrosse. Delaware has a little bit more depth. Should be a really good one. I think, you know, I'm like waffling between who's the favorite, Drexel or Delaware, to win this thing. And it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, Hofstra lost by a goal, 14-13, Delaware at home. So I feel like any of these teams are capable of beating each other. And I think they'll all have some confidence as they get ready to play. And Hofstra being at home on the island is always an advantage.
Are people going to hit Vincent's clam bar up there? I mean, that is, don't want to be a spoiler, but I mean, we have another coach talking about Vince's. Kevin Warren has opened Pandora's box when it comes to that fine establishment up in Long Island.
Well, the amazing thing is if you're a fan of either of the four teams that are playing here, you could either watch that 4 o'clock game and have the dinner afterwards, or go for early dinner and then still make it over there for the second game, which is number two Drexel versus number three UMass. That game's at 7 o'clock.
And Drexel, credit Brian Volker and his staff, 7 wins in a row. And like we said, playing with a ton of confidence, good lacrosse, gutsy win last week at Towson in the last minute. And UMass, you know, sitting overall at 4-5 has to be one of the bigger disappointments of 2021, but with an asterisk, right? Because
everyone gets one.
everyone gets an asterisk, but okay, so maybe UMass gets double asterisks because their season was delayed by a month. And it just seemed like it took forever for them to get out on the lacrosse field. But tournament time, anything can happen, yada, yada, yada. We'll see what goes down.
Yeah, maybe the Minutemen are peaking and can make a little run here and really upset things. All right, Dix, moving on to the Big Ten semifinals. They'll be at Penn State, and they'll be airing on the Big Ten Network. You'll be calling those games.
Yes, sir, with Joe B.
Always, as someone who worked in college athletics for a long time, on the event side, it's no fun to host a championship when your team has been eliminated. But nevertheless, those games will take place. The first game's at 5 o'clock, Maryland versus Michigan, who was the 5 seed. And before we get a preview of that game, Dix, let's bring in our guest this week, Michigan head coach Kevin Connery, for a discussion with him as he prepares for the Terps. Our guest this week is fourth-year Michigan head coach Kevin Connery. Wolverines advanced to the Big Ten semifinals with their win over arch rival Ohio State this past Saturday and will face number one Maryland on Thursday night. Coach Connery, thank you for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Coach, coming onto the podcast, you'll get the same question that every coach gets right off the bat, and that is the COVID question. I know it might seem like, ages ago when there was churn and anxiety around will we play, and if we do play, how does it look? But here you are advancing to the semifinals of the Big Ten lacrosse tournament on the men's side. Rewind a little bit, and I know that you guys go through things pretty regularly on a weekly basis, but what does COVID life look like in Ann Arbor?
Every day our guys get up, we test every morning. So every morning we get up, in order to enter our buildings and enter our facilities, we have to have an antigen testing. Before we play, once a week, we'll get a PCR test as well. So our guys are consistently tested on a day in and day out basis. That's a Big Ten rule. And we've been able to kind of keep our head above water and get all, so far, 11 games in, and with the opportunity to play at 12. You know, walking into the year, we sat down and said, this is our best opportunity to play 10 games as a Big Ten only schedule. And the chances of getting all Big Ten games in, it's a reach. But here we are. I give a lot of credit to the Michigan administration, our health and wellness team, our performance medicine team, the Big Ten as a whole, to put this thing together. And we've gotten all of the games in, which comparatively to the rest of the country is pretty rare. So we're very, very fortunate. The season was a roller coaster. Our guys have sacrificed a good amount. The guys, and have put their extracurriculars and normal college life in the back burner so they can have a season. And the sacrifice of these young men has been incredible, and it pays off.
Lacrosse is such a unique sport. It's not exclusive, but it's a sport where you compete with and against some of your closest friends. And this weekend for you is no different when you square off with Bobby Benson, the offensive coordinator for the University of Maryland. You guys are classmates. You guys were in each other's weddings. You're incredibly close. What are the challenges, if there are any, and the not so challenging things about facing guys that you are so, so close with?
Well, it's part of the fun. I mean, anytime you have a healthy friendship, there's competition involved, right? So you want to square up against your buddies and you want to beat them every opportunity you have. The great thing about lacrosse is the relationship you have. You walk off the field, no matter how heated you are, you send a text right away and say, hey, congratulations, your team looked great. Or, hey, tough one, good luck next week. There's always those opportunities to continue to enhance relationships. And, there's so many gifted coaches in this sport, and it just makes it easy for people to go sit on the sideline together in a summer recruiting event, regardless of the outcome of your regular season game, because they're fun to be around. They're good people. So, that goes a long way. Relationships, I'm a relationship guy. I believe in the power of relationships. That's how we're building our program. And so, you know, that goes a long way in my book.
Kevin, I asked this question earlier this season when we talked to Brian Volker. We mentioned coaching against friends and former teammates. There are a lot of Hopkins alumni in lacrosse coaching, including about 10%, seven of the Division I head coaches. And like Bobby, there's a lot of assistants too throughout, and D3 coaches who are friends. And why do you think so many Blue Jays end up in the coaching profession? And it's always been that way. Is it something about the Hopkins playing experience? Is there like a certain type of kid that is attracted to Hopkins, I don't know, legacy? I'm just curious to get your opinion on that.
You know, it's interesting. I've thought about it. I've never really been able to come up with a good answer for it. You know, I think no matter who you are, and if you're going to get into this business, you have to have a passion for lacrosse. It's like the guys that we bring into Michigan. They're passionate about lacrosse. And, you know, a lot of us decide to make it our life, our life's pursuit. So ultimately, you know, this is a fantastic game. You know, I've been fortunate to learn from and grow with a lot of fantastic individuals. And, you know, the mentors that I've had through this experience, you know, I was lucky enough to play for Coach Petromalo. I still have a great relationship with him and bounce a lot of ideas off of him. So that aspect of it, I think, holds dear. It's relationship built and it's passion. And it could just be, you know, year in and year out, you know, there's one place that pumps a bunch of coaches out one year, and then all of a sudden in 5 years, another place pumps a bunch of coaches out, and another place pumps a bunch of coaches out. So I don't think it's one particular school as much as it's just the individuals and the relationships and the mentors that are there.
So Coach, sticking on like the, you know, just looking at your backdrop, you know, you got a picture of yourself in your Hopkins uniform. Oh, yeah. Then you've got the big Michigan flag behind you. And then over there, then next to that, you have a lot of artwork of horses and unicorns and other types of critters. You're a girl dad. You know, and you've got three little girls. You're a pretty tough dude, you know, played the sport at a high level, coached the sport at a high level. What's it like to have all girls?
Oh boy. How long is this podcast? You know, I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's a totally different experience, you know, coming home after dealing with 50 to 52 young men and getting all of this, you know, testosterone driven competition and all of that. And you come home and you got, you know, three little girls and, you know, one's painting nails and the other one's drawing unicorns and, you know, but ultimately they're just kids. They want to run around. I got some rough and tumbles, little kids over here that are playing lacrosse and playing sports and all that. And so it's just a fun experience. You know, I think, you know, anybody who has kids can, and I'm sure you guys have kids too, just understanding that every day you walk in the door, it's a different day. So once you walk in, you shift your coach mode off and you turn your dad mode on and, you know, you hope to just survive for a few hours. So you get some quality time there.
So Coach, let's talk about your team a little bit. It, for you guys, it really starts at the Faceoff X, and Nick Rellet has been outstanding this season. First team, all Big Ten. What kind of advantage does he give you? And talk a little bit about him.
Well, he gives us an opportunity to possess the ball and really, you know, play a little complementary football, right? So we're out there, we have a lot of young guys running around, you know, and so when you have a lot of young guys, sometimes you want to, I'm not going to say ease into a game, but also kind of limit the amount of possessions that you need to play at one end of the field, specifically defense, right? So when you're starting a freshman, a sophomore, and a junior, and all freshmen and sophomores running around out there, you know, it can be overwhelming at times when we play the competition that we have. So Nick allows us to play that complementary football style where we can possess the ball, get comfortable, get into a rhythm. On the other side of it, he makes incredible plays. He's the toughest dude I've ever coached, and he's out there and he's getting knocked around like a pinball, and he just somehow comes up with the ball, and he's able to spark a lot of emotion for us. And it goes a long way for our team who, you know, as we're still a young program and building, right, there's still a lot of firsts that we're accomplishing, and Nick kind of spearheads a lot of those.
one of the first that you accomplished in 2021. I mean, we mentioned first ever Big Ten tournament appearance, first ever big tournament victory. But let's rewind a little bit. First ever win over Johns Hopkins. And I know I texted you after that game, and we spoke briefly. What exactly did that mean for yourself, but more importantly for Michigan lacrosse, to not only beat Johns Hopkins, but to beat them on Homewood Field?
Sure. Yeah. You know, so many great memories I've had on Homewood Field, you know, but you know, this isn't about me. This is about Michigan lacrosse, and it's a great benchmark for this program. You know, a perennial powerhouse like Johns Hopkins who have won national titles and have first team All-Americans across the board. We've had one All-American in our history, and Nick makes the, and Nick is only our second first team All Big Ten recipient award winner. So it's a benchmark. It's something to say, hey, this happens as a first, and it builds that confidence to no longer say that we can compete with this teams and these teams. We could beat these teams. And that really did strike a chord with our guys and allowed us to get a lot of confidence. And I think it showed down the stretch. We may not have pulled out some of the victories, but the margins of victories kept slimming down, and we were getting more confident, playing better and better and better, and getting incremental success in different phases of the game, which culminated into a big win in at Ohio State.
When you look around your league and lacrosse landscape in 2021, it's dominated, especially offensively, by older guys, seniors, fifth-year seniors. Yet you guys are being led by a sophomore and a freshman, more or less the most productive duo of young players in the Big Ten, in Joshuada and Michael Boehm. How do those guys set you up for the future? I mean, the future looks really bright in Ann Arbor with all the young players that are playing. And sometimes young guys play and it's by necessity and they don't necessarily get better. They're just getting a lot of playing time. But your guys seem to be stars in the making.
Yeah, I give those kids a lot of credit. They don't just come to practice for 2 hours and go home. You know, Mikey Boehm and Josh are out there for hours, you know, hitting the wall, doing extra shooting, doing extra dodging, meeting with Coach Terry to do some extra film work. They're two of those self-motivated guys who just want to get better, you know, and I think that it's infectious, right? They see what is ahead of them. They see how hard the Big Ten is and how competitive it is and such – and the landscape of how many great players we have in this conference. And they're not shy to say that they belong and they deserve to be at the top of the Big Ten, but also they understand that, you know, in order to get this program and get themselves to a point where we are consistent and a national brand, you know, then they need to continue to develop and work hard. And it goes across the board. It goes down to Jack Whitney, who's been starting almost every game for us at the defensive end. It goes into, you know, Grant McCurry, Isaac Aronson, Kyle Stevenson, all these freshmen who are running around out there as first-time players. But it also, you know, they're led by some incredible seniors and a guy like Avery Myers and Christian Ford and Jackson Zog, who have been in their shoes and have played early in their career and really helped them, you know, stay grounded and help their mindset.
You mentioned your defensive end coach, Jackson Zog, a terrific long stick midi, John Kirikoff doing a nice job between the pipes. How would you best describe your defensive unit in 2021, their evolution from February until early May?
Yeah, we sped up. You know, I think that's the best thing that we could say. You know, when you put a bunch of guys out there, and really our sophomore class never played a Big Ten game. So you look at those guys, and that's a good, healthy portion of our lineup as well. You got Ryan Shriver out there, who's Michael Cosgrove, Matt Kelly. Those are all of our defensive stalwarts there. And so when we were able to catch up to the pace, you know, and just, you know, not do the little things while playing at a fast pace, you know, how our bodies are positioned off ball. Are we standing up? Are our butts to the right sidelines? Are we looking at our teammates? That wasn't happening. We were 2 seconds behind in the first month. I think we sped up to about 1 second behind, and now we're starting to catch up to the game speed that is necessary in order to be a successful defense.
The Big Ten tournament in 2021, right off the bat, when I saw that all six teams were going to make it, I thought it was really, really exciting. And when you take into consideration, you guys became what, the five seed by virtue of a coin flip. First of all, were you privy to the coin flip? Did you witness it? Did you get a play by play? What went into the coin flip?
No, I wasn't there. They did it basically right after the game. I think I was still addressing the team after a heartbreaking of a Rutgers loss. We have a great administrator and she took care of it, and great office at the Big Ten. And they were very open about how the process went and why it went down. And I don't even know what we called, but you know, we got the five seed. It kind of worked out for us.
Terry Foy reported that it was tails. Tails never fails. So I don't know who called it.
I'm a tails never fails guy. I'm a tails never fails.
we had this discussion. You're a heads, I'm a heads guy. I'm a heads.
You're a heads.
I'm a tails never fails guy. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, I was very curious, and I don't know why this strikes me so much, but I want to know what kind of coin was flipped. Was it like a ceremonial, like Big Ten type of thing? Was it a silver dollar? Was it a quarter? And what would be like the best and worst coins for flipping? I think a dime is definitely the worst coin that you could do for a coin flip.
I'm just picturing, I picture two things. I picture Friday Night Lights with like dudes just sitting around a table, and then like the coin falls like underneath, a chair or something. And then the other one that I have is like they get to the tiebreaker and they have to go to the final piece, which is the coin. It's like, does anybody have, and like people are like reaching into their pockets and pulling change out, be like,
yeah, hey, everyone's on their phone trying to Venmo a coin somewhere.
Right? Yeah. I picture this giant ceremonial thing that the Big Ten has from like their football championship game or something, that the, you know, at the coin flip, and it's something like that. They're like, we'll use, you know, the Big Ten coin. On one side says like leaders, on the other side it says legends or something.
The fact that all six
find out
tournament, and then the five and six seeds are the ones that win the games. You know, I mean, that was incredible.
On the road.
Both road teams, absolutely. But now you turn the focus to the University of Maryland, and Ohio State's a team that you lost to twice in the regular season. You were able to flip the script in the tournament last week. What needs to happen for Michigan to flip the script against Maryland this time? You played them twice. You jumped out to that 5-0 lead a few weeks ago. So you know you can run with the Terps. What has to happen, and how do you size Maryland up at this point?
Sure. You know, I think to your point, with all six teams making the Big Ten tournament and the five and six teams win, it just speaks to the depth of the Big Ten and how powerful of a conference it is. And it just, I know sometimes the records don't look as pretty as some of the other schools, but ultimately we've been beating up on each other for the past 3 months. So, it is a really talented conference with teams who are tough and hardened and battle tested. And so we're very fortunate to get through and get to the Final Four. And yeah, we got a chance to compete against University of Maryland again. Obviously they've done a fantastic job this year. What jumps out to you right away is number one, Jared Bernhardt, in my opinion, is the best player in the country. You know, so we certainly have a tall task on our hands. But what they do so well is they share the ball. It's a very unselfish offense, and they do a great job in between the lines. And you can see the impact of Bobby Benson and his coaching style on that offense. For us to be successful, we got to control the pace. We got to have the ball. We have to make good stops and turn them into clears. And we got to be really efficient with our offensive possessions. You know, search for the best shot. You know, they're such a very disciplined defense that they're not going to just give us easy 10-yard step downs with our hands free. We got to make them work and really put the ball into strength and move off ball so we're finding those lanes. When we start playing as an unselfish group and cut to free up others, you know, then we're going to be successful. We can score and we feel really confident in our offensive group. But we did find a little nugget there against Ohio State with our transition game. We have to continue to play our transition game and finish our routes. And we weren't doing that earlier in the year, and they finally kind of started to progress. And, you know, when you prepare for teams like Rutgers and Maryland and Ohio State who do so well in transition, you're practicing it over and over again with your D-middies. Now all of a sudden they're starting to get more and more comfortable with it. So it's been a real nice change, and it's good to see our poles scoring some goals.
Kevin, you mentioned that you are a girl dad. My oldest daughter is 7, and she played her first lacrosse game this past weekend. And it was something. It was emotional. Like, I literally got, took some pictures. It was great. But another notable lacrosse dad is John Harbaugh, head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. His daughter plays at Notre Dame. I remember him like sneaking out of Ravens mini camp or something to come to our girls committed academy. And he kind of, without any fanfare, just slid in next to his wife and watched some games on the sideline and got back to the Ravens facility. But my question is, his brother, Jim Harbaugh, Lack's dad, is he a supportive of the programs at Michigan? Is he a lacrosse fan? What can you say?
I think Coach Harbaugh does such a great job with our football program. He's a Michigan Wolverine through and through. He works all the programs, top to bottom. We've actually had a few multi-sport guys. He's a big believer in the multi-sport athlete. We had Andrew Russell, who was on our team for a few years. He was a football lacrosse athlete. So there's a lot of support for all the coaches, for all the every other coaches and all the student athletes here. It's a really supportive athletic department. And I think what I've learned here, that everybody's trying to help each other and learn from each other. There's so many great coaches here that you could pick someone's brain for hours and just completely have your mind blown. And it's really it's a unique working environment. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear. All right. Thank you so much for your time. One last question. We've asked this about every coach this, and this is a two-parter for you. So what's your favorite sandwich at Zingerman's? And second, 2021, very different in terms of road trips. You probably aren't eating like elaborate team meals in restaurants. You're probably doing stuff in hotels, things like that. What are the restaurants on your usual schedule that you've missed the most in 2021 and hope to get back to soon on the road?
Now, I'm a loyal listener to the Deep Fly and Dixie podcast, so I know the lineup of the restaurants that have been popped out there.
Okay? All right, good.
Right? And I'm going to go ahead and say that, yes, Maggiano's is always an important one, right? Especially when you go to the Triangle down in the North Carolina area. There's a great Maggiano's down there. The next one is Vincent's Clam Bar, and Coach Warren is an advocate for that one. Fantastic meal. But the number one, and I'll never forget, is still Sammy's in Baltimore.
Wow.
Nice. Okay.
A close one, though. The Vincent's and Sammy's go, you know, that's 1A and 1B.
Yeah, I got it. If I'm ever near up by Hempstead Way, I'm going to Vincent's. Got to. All right. Got to get the Zingerman's sandwich question.
You know, I am a Long Island guy. The one thing about Zingerman's that they do not have is a chicken cutlet sandwich. They have a good grilled chicken sandwich, but not a chicken cutlet sandwich. So I'm more partial to town. There's amazing Blue Deli in town that does a fantastic chicken cutlet sandwich. That's the one I jump on.
Great answer. You were good prepared. Answer. You were well prepared. Total Hoppings.
I told you, I'm a fan of the show.
Well prepared, just like the Wolverines, and it shows out on the field. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you this Thursday against the Terps and moving forward with your program.
Thank you very much, guys, for having me on.
Coach Connery really seems to have the Wolverines program moving in the right direction.
Yeah, he does. And there are two things that stood out to me in speaking with him, both in preparation for the broadcast and then having him as a guest on the podcast. Like, he's so proud. I mean, he's really proud of his team. You know, when you look at a team like Michigan, you're like 2-8. Oh, they, you know, whatever. But that's the most wins they've ever had in Big Ten play. And I understand it was the double dip this year. So you had double the opportunity, but they beat Johns Hopkins, as he mentioned. Like, anytime you beat Hopkins, that's a special, special win. And then they go in. First off, let me just say, I love the fact that all the teams made the Big Ten tournament this year, because you had the 5 and the 6, two upsets, quote unquote, in the quarterfinal round. They were able to go in and beat Ohio State, who had beaten them twice in the regular season. And we talk all the time about how special that rivalry is to the Buckeyes. now it really is a rivalry. You know, Michigan's beaten them twice now in the last 2 years, this time in the shoe in the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, pride, you know, the pride just kind of comes through with Coach Connery. And another thing is he didn't lead us to the Zingerman's answer too much. Yeah, he went to the Maize and Blue Deli.
He was very politically correct about that. He kind of just avoided it in a real positive way, giving a shout out to the chicken cutlet sandwich over at Maize and Blue.
He likes what he likes, and chicken cutlet is religion on Long Island. I've only had one chicken cutlet sub in my life, I think. But I went out of my way to get it at I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Trinacria, spelled Trinacria. And that's down on Packa Street around the University of Maryland Medical Center. But that it's like an Italian grocer deli type thing. And that's a legit chicken cutlet sub there. But Coach Connery is sticking to his guns. So good for him.
Yeah, I also found it interesting when we asked them about the Maryland game. They feel like they can play with them and they're ready for that game. And I like how he said, you know, a nugget he took away from the Ohio State game is that they can get some transition game going out of their midfield.
Yeah. Michigan is a team that people have been saying all along, they're better than people think they are. They're improved. And we're seeing it now. Will it be enough to beat Maryland, the number one team in the country, with, as Coach Connery said, in a lot of people's opinions, the best player in college lacrosse? That remains to be seen. But they're not going to Penn State just to show up and get a consolation trophy, as Coach Connery alluded to. They're going to win, and they want to stick around for another 48 hours and play for the championship. But that it's a tall order. I'm just going to say, if they do fall in the semis to Maryland, this season has been a successful one for the University of Michigan lacrosse.
Yeah, I agree. Dixon, a year where a lot of teams, when they get to the conference championships, you're always playing someone for the second time. And this year, a lot of it's going to be for the third time. And another instance, just like that Maryland-Michigan game, will be when number two Rutgers plays number six seeded Johns Hopkins in the nightcap, 7:30. Again, on the Big Ten Network. And, the Blue Jays have been playing better lacrosse lately.
They have. And going into the quarterfinal game last week, you ask yourself the question, you know, okay, Hopkins gave their best effort of the year against Maryland, but what Hopkins player, what Hopkins team can't get up for Maryland? Like, that's the rivalry. Will there be either a hangover from losing that game and they'll show up flat to Penn State? Or will they be galvanized by that effort and realize that we just took the number one team in the country down to the wire? And it was the latter. You know, they came out confident, scored some goals, got great goaltending from Tim Marcio. He's made a huge difference. He has made a huge difference for Hopkins. Some good goaltending, and they're playing with a lot of confidence right now. And both of their games in the regular season with Rutgers were competitive. The game at Homewood Field, they led. And then the game up in Piscataway, they had an opportunity to make a play. I mean, they had a 6-on-3 at one point, an extra man situation, and couldn't – I don't even know if they took a shot. But if they did, they weren't great shots. So you can give a lot of credit to Rutgers for playing good three-man down defense. But I think on the other hand, you got to be like, look, you know, you gotta score when you're three men up. You know, you gotta can one. So as you mentioned, Rutgers, fun team to watch. I mean, raise your hand out there if you don't want to see Rutgers in the NCAA tournament. I mean, this is a team everybody enjoys watching play. They get up and down the field. They play good defense. They got a terrific goalie. They can score. This should be a really, really good game. I think it should be a very good game. Hopkins has the advantage at the faceoff dot, but I think most other places, when you look at the matchups, it tilts in the favor of Rutgers, but they just have to show up and do it and win the game.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see, you know, Hopkins, obviously the sixth seed, playing almost pressure free, not much is expected of them. I want to see how Rutgers comes out. Are they an older senior dominated, graduate student dominated team that will impose their will on Hopkins, or will they play a little bit tight? You know, hoping that they need to get to an at-large bid or win the Big Ten championship. And that will be, I think this game will really be decided who wins the game in the first half of this game, early in this game. Who, if Hopkins hangs tight, it'll be a great game. If Rutgers imposes their will as they can, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think you make great points, because right now Michigan and Hopkins are both playing with house money, you know. And again, that's the great thing about the Big Ten tournament. You had the five and the sixes advancing, both road teams advancing. So anything can happen. It's May, right?
Yeah. Who are you calling those games with?
So I got the semifinals with Joe Beninati, and then Joe has a Capitals assignment for the championship game. So Joe's out for the title tilt. And Pete Medhurst will be back in. So I'm in good hands either way.
All right. Well, we talked about the Big East a little bit earlier. They will play their semifinals at Providence on Thursday. The top-seeded Denver Pioneers playing the home team Providence at 5:30. All of these games in the Big East will be on CBS Sports Network, followed by number 2 Georgetown versus number 3 seed Villanova.
Well, look, Denver and Providence, you know, Providence has the home field advantage. Denver, I think, is the better team. And the Villanova-Georgetown game, let's not forget, Georgetown beat Villanova back in the season opener 16-1. And then the next game that was played in D.C. was much more competitive. And Villanova right now is playing, has to be, I mean, they dismantled a really good Lehigh team, doubled them up. And can they carry that juice into the game against Georgetown, who is coming off of what Kevin Warren called their worst game of the season, a loss to the Loyola Greyhounds a little over a week ago. So we'll see how this one plays out, but should be a terrific game. And another one of those, you know, 2-0 setups where the, you know, Denver beat Providence twice, Georgetown beat Villanova twice. Can either the Friars or the Wildcats buck the trend?
The other semifinal of note will take place on Friday, May 7th. Patriot League semifinals were determined after Tuesday night games. South number 1, Lehigh, will take on the North quarterfinal winner, who was Colgate. That'll be the first game of the evening. That's at 4 o'clock. Both of these games will be on the CBS Sports Network. In the nightcap, number 1, North seed Army will take on the South quarterfinal winner, which is Loyola. That game will be at 7. I think that game is a bit of an elimination game.
Lehigh, they get back on the field after that. Really, I mean, it was a stunning loss to Villanova. Not just that they lost to the Wildcats, but, you know, 16-8. That's an eye-opener. That's an exclamation point. So now Lehigh gets to face Colgate, a team that they beat 15-10 back on March 28th. I think, you know, definitely the Mountain Hawks are the favorite in this game.
Army Loyola, this will be a battle.
It will be. And the Black Knights really dominated Loyola back on April 10th, 12-7. That was a game. I remember watching that game, and at no point did I feel like Army was threatened in that contest. And that was a game when Cam Wires, terrific defenseman, first team All Patriot League, shut down Brendan Nechtern in that game. Nechtern didn't do anything, but other pieces for the Cadets filled out the score sheet and made big plays. You know, I think Loyola's really, you know, they figured out they lost Joey Kamish, they lost Matt LeBlanc on the offensive and defense end respectively, and they seem to be a little lost after they lost to Navy in their second meeting with the midshipmen. But credit Charlie Toomey and his coaching staff. They pulled it together, knocked off a very good Georgetown team. Then they dominated Navy in the Patriot League quarterfinals. I mean, that game was – that game, you know, Loyola came out really humming and executing at a high level. Can they replicate that against Army? They're going to have to find a way to penetrate the Black Knight defense. They couldn't win matchups in that first game. They will probably enjoy the majority of face-offs, possessions, because Army just doesn't face off well. So it's all a matter, if you're a Loyola fan, of can they win matchups against Army's defense?
ton of great games on Thursday and Friday, plus all the action that'll take place. On Saturday, we have the championships games of the NEC, MAC, the America East, CAA, Big East, and the Big Ten. Sunday, we'll crown the Patriot League champion, and it's Selection Sunday. When we talk next week, Dix, we'll be previewing the NCAA tournament. How exciting is that?
Can you believe it?
Let's hope everything works out.
And make sure the NCAA selection show is this Sunday night on ESPNU, I think, and it's at 9 p.m., so make sure you tune into that. But, I mean, this week is so big, we're recording a day early. We're putting the podcast out a day early, right?
Yeah, we're sliding the schedule up to give you the previews that you deserve, to get you excited and pumped for championship week.
What about, I mean, you did, let's just be perfectly transparent to our listeners, though. You did turn down. I said we could record Thursday night at 11 o'clock after I got done the Big Ten semifinals with our smoking hot takes. And you said, no, thank you.
there'd be a lot of editing that I didn't need to do.
A lot of games.
So we decided to, it's a good transition. See, I'm a pro. Watch how I'm going to swing this. We talked about Zingerman sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And you said smoking hot takes. Do you remember the Smoking Jay sandwich?
Yes.
At Eddie's Supermarket? Yeah.
I got a smoking Jay's right before Christmas because Eddie's closed for good in Charles Village.
All of them or just the Charles Village one?
Well, you know, so they're like Eddie's in Charles Village is not a part of the franchise or the ownership group that's Eddie's on Charles Street and then Eddie's Roland Park.
But don't they have Eddie's the same Charles sandwiches?
With Jerry Gordon.
They don't make the same sandwiches?
No. Mm-mm. No. Yeah, so Eddie's Roland Park and Eddie's Charles Street in Towson are aligned. Like they have the same menus, sandwiches. Maybe the one on Charles Street's a little bit more unique with the names of the schools and all that. But basically you get the same recipes. But Eddie's Charles Village was Jerry Gordon. He was on his own.
So let's talk sandwiches.
Let's.
And full transparency, we're recording this on Wednesday, right before lunchtime. Dix has got to travel to State College for the Big Ten tournament later, and this is the only time we could really work this out. So I'm hungry. Let's talk sandwiches.
Okay.
So I don't know where to go with this. You know, Zingerman's, I have never been there. Have you been there, Zingerman's?
I shouldn't say a bunch. Whenever I've been in Ann Arbor, which is two or three times now for lacrosse, I always make it. You know what? The first time I went, I didn't make it. And then the next two or three times that I've been out there, I made sure to get to Zingerman's.
So Absolutely. Tell me about it. What kind of sandwich would you get there?
I don't remember exactly because Zingerman's is a place where you walk in and it is just this gigantic menu. It's almost like you walk into a temple and there's a mural with everything you could possibly want. So you order your sandwich. I think I've gone for... There's a lot going on in the sandwich as well. It could be like pastrami, corned beef, roast beef, turkey, but then you have like Thousand Island dressing, coleslaw. And I don't want to make it sound like it's all like Reuben-esque or,
yeah.
I mean, you can also get chicken salad, tuna salad. You can make it as hearty as you want or as piecemeal as you want. Matter of fact, Rob Kalishman just went to Zingerman's, one of our loyal listeners. His son Noah goes to the University of Michigan and Rob sent me pictures.
Senior? What year is Noah?
I've lost track. Sammy is a freshman in college, so Noah's got to be a junior or a senior. Time flies, right?
Yeah.
But Rob sent me pictures of a Zingerman. It looked like it was a pastrami. But it's just, and then the other cool thing about Zingerman's is they got great pickles. And then also they have all different kinds of fountain soda. So like cherry cream soda and orange cream soda and diet in those varieties too. So it's the sandwiches and the sodas and, you know, so I never drink soda, but when I go to Zingerman's, I always have to get, and it's like a bottomless cup too. So you go back and fill it up as many times as you want. It's dangerous. Sounds very amazing. Dangerous. So it's just, you know, it's just, and I, I, I'm sorry, I don't know the names of the sandwiches. This is one of the things where you go in and whatever you have a hankering for, you're like, yep, I want number whatever.
Do you prefer this, a sandwich shop, a deli, which there aren't a whole lot of those. There are sub shops much more common, especially like we're, you know, around where we live. Have you been to the one in Maple Lawn, Mickey and Mel's?
No, I haven't.
It's right where the lacrosse store used to be.
The old Lax World.
It's where Lax World used to be.
Okay.
So it's just down from Looney's and Lib's Grill.
Whatever. I know exactly where it is on the back side.
And it is authentic. It is amazing.
Really good?
Yeah. It is a Jewish deli with big sandwiches and soups. And it's legit. And we don't have a lot of those around here.
There's my favorite sandwich shops. I mean, when you say like sub shops, I think like Subway and Jimmy John's and Jersey Mike's, which are
chains. No, I wouldn't do that for myself. I think of
Tawny Town in Catonsville. I think of the Wine Merchant out there on Falls Road. Trinacria, what I just mentioned, down on Paca Street. Deep Pasquale's down on Golf Street. Which is, they're moving, by the way. They're moving to Bolton Hill. Deep Pasquale's is. Yeah.
Yeah, we used to go to Isabella's at Inside La Crosse when I worked there. It was over in Little Italy, just walked over. Brick oven pizza place. Mm-hmm. They had this one sandwich, which I never had anywhere else, but it was shaved pork with tomato and mozzarella cheese and the porchetta sandwich with rosemary and this, oh my god, so good.
I can see the drool coming out of your mouth.
The shaved anything is delicious. Yeah, so if sandwiches, I'm not a Reuben guy. I don't really do a whole lot of that. I like multiple meats, though. I'll do, if I'm just making my sandwich, it will be like turkey and ham or whatever else I have. But even when I'm making it at home, tuna fish, chicken salad, those type of things are always good at a deli. Eddie's chicken salad.
Pristine. Delicious.
And I separate the sandwich thing from the subs. I would probably prefer a sub shop and get a cheesesteak or Italian cold cut type of sandwich or a chicken parm sub, probably over a sandwich, but depends where you are and what you're in the mood for, right?
I'm the same way. I'm a sub guy. I love subs. So like when I go to the Wine Merchant, like my favorite sub is the Bomber. It's a roast beef with a horseradish cheese and like a tiger sauce. And yeah, you always get lettuce and tomato on it. But then, you know, if I'm trying to be a little bit, if I'm not as hungry, go for their chicken salad on a multigrain. And then if you're really like not super hungry, like a wrap, you know, like a shrimp salad wrap or the chicken salad wrap, but you can load it up with banana peppers and onion and tomato, lettuce, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm a big chicken salad guy. Probably chicken salad, my favorite. Tuna salad, I like too. But sometimes you know, I don't know, man, what it is. Like, I've heard so many stories of guys getting sick on tuna salad. You know, not talking about gas station tuna salad, but a buddy of mine years ago got sick. He ordered tuna salad from Subway. And that's one thing I'll never, ever, ever do. But he was sick for a day or two. Love a good Italian cold cut.
Yeah.
Can't beat a good Italian cold cut. Deep Pasquale's has incredible, because they use actual Italian bread in Deep Pasquale's. Deep Pasquale's bread is so crispy, like I've cut my mouth on it, the corners of my mouth before. Like I'll take a bite, and I'm like, oh man, this is really good. Then I wipe my mouth with the napkin, and it's like blood on it. I'm like, what the hell's going on? They're like, you cut yourself. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. But yeah, Eddie's chicken salad is excellent.
Yeah, really, there's, really good.
I gotta give a shout out to Stan Levy, lacrosse ref. He's retired now from being a chef at the Eddie's in Roland Park, but he used to be the chef down there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, that sounds like a good place to leave it. Plus, I'm hungry. I got to eat. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. There are a ton of great games this week on TV, including the Big Ten semifinals and finals that Dixie will be covering. And we'd like to thank our guest this week, Kevin Conrad, whose Wolverines will be playing on Thursday evening. Don't forget to watch the ESPNU show at 9 o'clock on Sunday, correct?
9 o'clock Sunday, selection all Sunday. Right. Yeah.
We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse and I'm simply at D_FLY. And remember, we've almost made it there, guys. We're almost to the NCAA tournament. So stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games while you can.